This text was prepared by Donald Leinson, CHARLIE Adidirect. C.com. The Fitzboodle Papers. By William Macapus Thackeray. Contents, The Fitzboodle Papers. Fitzboodle's Confessions. Preface, Dorothea, Attilia, Fitzboodle's Professions. First Profession, Second Profession, Fitzboodle's Confessions. Asterisk, asterisk, preface. George Fitzboodle Esquire, to Oliver York Esquire. Omnium Club, May 20, 1842. Dear Sir, I have always been considered the third best whist player in Europe, and, though never betting more than £5, have for many years past added considerably to my yearly income by my skill in the game, until the commencement of the present season, when a French gentleman, Monsieur Lalouette, was admitted to the club where I usually play. His skill and reputation were so great that no men of the club were inclined to play against us two of a side, and the consequence has been that we have been in a manner pitted against one another. By a strange turn of luck, for I cannot admit the idea of his superiority, fortune, since the Frenchman's arrival, has been almost constantly against me, and I have lost 32 nights in the course of a couple of score of nights' play. Asterisk, the Fitzboodle Papers first appeared in Fraser's Magazine for the year 1842. Everybody knows that I am a poor man, and so much has Lalouette's luck drained my finances, that only last week I was obliged to give him that famous gray cob on which you have seen me riding in the park. I can't afford a thoroughbred, and hate a cocktail. I was, I say, forced to give him up my cob in exchange for 4 ponies which I owed him. Thus, as I never walk, being a heavy man whom nobody cares to mount, my time hangs heavily on my hands, and, as I hate home, or that apology for it a bachelor's lodgings, and as I have nothing earthly to do now until I can afford to purchase another horse, I spend my time in sauntering from one club to another, passing many rather listless hours in them before the men come in. You will say, why not take to backgammon, or ecart, or amuse yourself with a book? Sir, putting out of the question the fact that I do not play upon credit, I make a point never to play before candles are lighted. And as for books, I must candidly confess to you I am not a reading man. 'Twas but the other day that someone recommended me to your magazine after dinner, saying it contained an exceedingly witty article upon I forget what. I give you my honor, sir, that I took up the work at 6, meaning to amuse myself till 7, when Lord Trumpington's dinner was to come off, and egad, in 2 minutes I fell asleep, and never woke till midnight. Nobody ever thought of looking for me in the library, where nobody ever goes. And so ravenously hungry was I, that I was obliged to walk off to Crockford's for supper. What is it that makes you literary persons so stupid? I have met various individuals in society who I was told were writers of books, and that sort of thing, and expecting rather to be amused by their conversation, have invariably found them dull to a degree, and as for information, without a particle of it. Sir, I actually asked one of these fellows, what was the nick to 7? And he stared in my face and said he didn't know. He was hugely overdressed in satin, rings, chains and so forth, and at the beginning of dinner was disposed to be rather talkative and pert. But my little Sally silenced him, I promise you, and got up a good laugh at his expense too. Eve George alone, said little Lord Cinqbers, I warrant he'll be a match for any of you literary fellows. Cinqbers is no great wiseacre, but, indeed, it requires no great wiseacre to know that. What is the simple deduction to be drawn from this truth? Why, this that a man, to be amusing and well-informed, has no need of books at all, and had much better go to the world and to men for his knowledge. There was Ulysses, now, the Greek fellow engaged in the Trojan War, as I dare say you know. Well, he was the cleverest man possible, and how? From having seen men and cities, their manners noted and their realms surveyed, to be sure. So have I have been in every capital, and can order a dinner in every language in Europe. My notion, then, is this. I have a great deal of spare time on my hands, and as I am told you pay a handsome sum to persons writing for you, I will furnish you occasionally with some of my views upon men and things, occasional histories of my acquaintance, which I think may amuse you, personal narratives of my own, essays, and what not. I am told that I do not spell correctly. This, of course, I don't know, but you will remember that Richelieu and Marlborough could not spell, and egad. I am an honest man, and desire to be no better than they. I know that it is the matter, and not the manner, which is of importance. Have the goodness, then, to let one of your understrappers correct the spelling and the grammar of my papers, and you can give him a few shillings in my name for his trouble. Begging you to accept the assurance of my high consideration, I am, sir, your obedient servant, George Savage Fitzpoodle. P.S.S. By the way, I have said in my letter that I found all literary persons vulgar and dull. Permit me to contradict this with regard to yourself. I met you once at Blackwall, I think it was, and really did not remark anything offensive in your accent or appearance. Before commencing the series of moral disquisitions, and see which I intend, the reader may as well know who I am, and what my past course of life has been. To say that I am a Fitzpoodle is to say at once that I am a gentleman. Our family has held the estate of Poodle ever since the reign of Henry II. And it is out of no ill will to my elder brother, or a natural desire for his death, but only because the estate is a very good one, that I wish heartily it was mine. I would say as much of Chatsworth or Eaton Hall. I am not, in the first place, what is called a ladies' man, having contracted an irrepressible habit of smoking after dinner, which has obliged me to give up a great deal of the dear creature's society. Nor can I go much to country houses for the same reason. Say what they will, ladies do not like you to smoke in their bedrooms. Their silly little noses scent out the odor upon the chintz, weeks after you have left them. Sir John has been caught coming to bed particularly merry, and redolent of cigar smoke. Young George, from Eton, was absolutely found in the little greenhouse puffing an Havana. And when discovered they both lay the blame upon Fitzpoodle. Tea was Mr. Fitzpoodle, Mama, says George, who offered me the cigar, and I did not like to refuse him. Had rascal Fitz seduced us, my dear, says Sir John, and kept us laughing until past midnight. Her ladyship instantly sets me down as a person to be avoided. Earch, whispers she to her boy, promise me on your honor, when you go to town, not to know that man. And when she enters the breakfast room for prayers, the first greeting is a peculiar expression of countenance, and inhaling of breath, by which my lady indicates the presence of some exceedingly disagreeable odor in the room. She makes you the faintest of curtsies, and regards you, if not with a lashing eye, as in the novels, at least with a distended nostril. During the whole of the service, her heart is filled with the blackest gall towards you, and she is thinking about the best means of getting you out of the house. What is this smoking, that it should be considered a crime? I believe in my heart that women are jealous of it, as of a rival. They speak of it as of some secret, awful vice that seizes upon a man, and makes him a pariah from genteel society. I would lay a guinea that many a lady who has just been kind enough to rend the above lines lays down the book after this confession of mine that I am a smoker, and says, "Oh, the vulgar wretch," and passes on to something else. The fact is, that the cigar is a rival to the ladies, and their conqueror too. In the chief pipe-smoking nations they are kept in subjection. While the chief, Little White Belt, smokes, the women are silent in his wigwam, while Mahomet Ben Jabraham causes volumes of odorous incense of Latakia to play round his beard, the women of the harem do not disturb his meditations, but only add to the delight of them by tinkling on a dulcimer and dancing before him. When Professor Strumpf of Göttingen takes down number 13 from the wall, with a picture of Beatrice Senkai upon it, and which holds a pound of canister. The Frau Professor knows that for 2 hours Hermann is engaged, and takes up her stockings and knits in quiet. The constitution of French society has been quite changed within the last 12 years. An ancient and respectable dynasty has been overthrown. An aristocracy which Napoleon could never master has disappeared. And from what cause? I do not hesitate to say, from the habit of smoking. Ask any man whether, 5 years before the Revolution of July, if he wanted a cigar at Paris, they did not bring you a roll of tobacco with a straw in it. Now, the whole city smokes. Society is changed. And be sure of this, ladies, a similar combat is going on in this country at present between cigar smoking and you. Do you suppose you will conquer? Look over the wide world, and see that your adversary has overcome it. Germany has been puffing for 80 years. France smokes to a man. Do you think you can keep the enemy out of England? Sah! Look at his progress. Ask the clubhouses, have they smoking rooms or not? Are they not obliged to yield to the general want of the age, in spite of the resistance of the old women on the committees? I, for my part, do not despair to see a bishop lolling out of the Athenaeum with a cheroot in his mouth, or, at any rate, a pipe stuck in his shovel hat. But as in all great causes, and in promulgating new and illustrious theories, their first propounders and exponents are generally the victims of their enthusiasm, of course the first preachers of smoking have been martyrs too, and George Fitzpoodle is one. The first gas man was ruined. The inventor of steam engine printing became a pauper. I began to smoke in days when the task was one of some danger, and paid the penalty of my crime. I was flogged most fiercely for my first cigar, for, being asked to dine one Sunday evening with a half-pay colonel of dragoons, the gallant, simple, humorous shortcut, heaven bless him. I have had many a guinea from him who had so few. He insisted upon my smoking in his room at the Salopian, and the consequence was, that I became so violently ill, as to be reported intoxicated upon my return to Slaughterhouse School, where I was a boarder, and I was whipped the next morning for my peccadillo. At Christchurch, one of our tutors was the celebrated lamented Otto Rose, who would have been a bishop under the present government, had not an immoderate indulgence in water gruel cut short his elegant and useful career. He was a good man, a pretty scholar and poet. The episode upon the discovery of eau de Cologne, in his prize poem on Urine, was considered a masterpiece of art, though I am not much of a judge myself upon such matters, and he was as remarkable for his fondness for a tuft as for his nervous antipathy to tobacco. As ill luck would have it, my rooms in Tom Quad were exactly under his, and I was grown by this time to be a confirmed smoker. I was a baronet's son. We are of James the First's creation, and I do believe our tutor could have pardoned any crime in the world but this. He had seen me in a tandem, and at that moment, was seized with a violent fit of sneezing, sternudatory paroxysm he called it, at the conclusion, of which I was a mile down the Woodstock Road. He had seen me in pink, as we used to call it, swaggering in the open sunshine across a grass plat in the court, but spied out opportunely a servitor, one Todd Hunter by name, who was going to morning chapel with his shoestring untied, and forthwith sprung towards that unfortunate person, to set him an imposition. Everything, in fact, but tobacco he could forgive. Why did cursed fortune bring him into the rooms over mine? The odor of the cigars made his gentle spirit quite furious. And one luckless morning, when I was standing before my oak, and chanced to puff a great bouffee of Verena's into his face, he forgot his respect for my family altogether.
I was the second son, and my brother a sickly creature then. He is now 16 stone in weight, and has a half score of children.
Gave me a severe lecture, to which I replied rather hotly, as was my wont. And then came demand for an apology, refusal on my part, appeal to the dean, convocation, and rustication of George Savage Fitzboodle. My father had taken a second wife of the noble house of Flintskinner, and Lady Fitzboodle detested smoking, as a woman of her high principles should. As he had an entire mastery over the worthy old gentleman, and thought I was a sort of demon of wickedness. The old man went to his grave with some similar notion, heaven help him, and left me, but the wretched £12,000 secured to me on my poor mother's property. In the army, my luck was much the same. I joined the TH Lancers, Lieut. Colonel Lord Martingale, in the year 1817. I only did duty with the regiment for 3 months. We were quartered at Cork, where I found the Irish duteen and tobacco the pleasantest smoking possible, and was found by his lordship, one day upon stable duty, smoking the shortest, dearest little dumpy clay pipe in the world. Cornet Fitzboodle, said my lord in a towering passion, from what blackguard did you get that pipe? I omit the oaths which garnished invariably his lordship's conversation. I got it, my lord, said I, from one Terence Mullins, a jingle driver, with a packet of his peculiar tobacco. You sometimes smoke Turkish, I believe. Do try this. Isn't it good? And in the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.